Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
What a week it's been, Ian. How has yours been?
Well, I'm getting a cold, so yeah, wonderful.
I'm getting the old nasal tickle as well.
I've got a light cough, and I feel a bit grim. Like, not awful, but like a bit grim. And I'm glad we're recording this today, because I just have this feeling that it's not going to get better for me over the weekend.
I think you will fight it. You will use the fist of... I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, it's like so many of your sentences. They often end in inspired genius, but sometimes they don't.
Like that one, yeah. Well, tell you what, let's get into this one, because firstly, I want to ask you a little question. Would you like 1,800 free pounds?
Sure.
Good, because I read on the BBC this week that millions of UK consumers could receive just such a sackful of cash after a legal claim was launched against some mobile phone networks that we've talked about before now. There's a chap, we'll call him Justin.
That because it's his name?
That's because it's his name. Oh. And he is seeking damages on behalf of any of us who have Vodafone, EE3 or O2 contracts in their personal history, to the tune of more than 3 billion great British pounds. And they are great. Don't know if you've seen one lately, but they're like a little dollop of pure British Isles. Mr. Gutman, that is his, that's the rest of his name, who actually used to be a big cheese at the Citizens Advice Bureau. Well, it used to be called the Bureau. I think they dropped it 20 years ago, but Citizens Advice. He says that phone networks have been overcharging millions of us by taking our money after our contracts expire, despite our having paid off the cost of the device that they sold us as part of the contract. This is called the loyalty penalty claim. It's being filed with the Competition Appeal Tribunal. And according to the BBC story, Mr. Gutman estimates that 28.2 million UK mobile phone contracts could have been affected from 2017. So over 15 years worth. And if it's successful, someone who had a contract with one of those...
You said 2017, but you meant 2007.
I did, and you were right to correct me. Thank you, yes. 15 years ago.
Yes.
If someone who'd had a contract with one of those companies could get, so he estimates, more than 1,800 quid. It could take time. It will probably take years, if it even works. So watch this space. The companies in the story I saw said it was either a baseless claim, or they had nothing to say, or it didn't affect them, or, you know, tune to that effect. No one's come out and said this is legit and we're taking it very seriously. But looking into the story, I realized that we'd actually talked about the time Ofcom had told companies, not just mobile phone companies, but any of these contractual service providers, had to let people know when their contracts were coming up to the end of their life. And that... we talked about that about 3 years ago, because I think it was in 2020. And evidence has suggested that things have got better and people are cancelling sooner and there are fewer complaints. But this is all about historic overcharging anyway. This isn't about saying we think people today are being ripped off. He may well think that, and certainly evidence suggests that some people are. But this really is about looking over the last 15 years and saying, were you stiffed for cash and are you due some of it back? Now, we also had the 2015 Consumer Rights Act. So we've had that now for almost 10 years, 9 years, really. And this is where we got this funky ability to file a kind of opt-out lawsuit on behalf of strangers, which is what this basically is. If you don't want to be part of this, you need to follow some steps, and they're convoluted and annoying, in order to opt out. Otherwise, you've been opted in, or rather you are involved already. There's nothing you can do about it except for following those steps. But Gutman, Justin Gutman, was beating the drum for this whole opt-out thing in the run-up to what became the 2015 Consumer Rights Act. So he's definitely got to be in his bonnet about this. That is enough Nate for now. Let's have some Ian. Well, I see one in my future. Here it is. He has an opinion, I'm sure.
Of course. But this is not new. I believe that the concept here, I'm sure, was talked about years ago, like before we had a conversation about a related subject, because it pertains to people basically the idea that your contract has the cost of your handset built in, right? And then when you come to the end of that contract, you're still, if you're paying the same, you're essentially still paying for a handset you've already paid off. But I was under the impression that sort of most, I mean, sure, that's fine, but consumers surely have to have some responsibility for, checking in on contracts as they expire. I mean, I get the point, because in an ideal world, honesty would prevail. And once you'd paid off your phone, if you opted not to get a new phone, then your contract price would drop down to, you know, X amount less. But also, I had this every year with Virgin. If you stick on Virgin without calling the customer retentions number, they'll just whack your bill up by a tenner or something. You know, mine was 35 and it went up to 53 or something. So you have to be on top of it. Now, I'm not saying that's right, because I think it's a disgrace. I think, you know, given the fact that there's already RPI price increases on everything every year, really, you know, they should be forced not to just randomly put your bill up for no apparent reason. But of course, they get around it by claiming it's a discount for the rest of the time, which it, anyway, sorry, I'm getting myself tied up here with rage because it's fresh. This is the the brilliance of a opt-out class action lawsuit, and I don't like it.
Now, is this the equivalent? Because this is a big thing in the US. You see class action lawsuits all the time, but it feels like this is something that's only really been a thing here over the last few years.
Yes.
Maybe it's because of the Consumer Rights that Act we mentioned from 2015 that essentially made it possible. I'm not a legal expert, neither is Ian, and we're not a legal show. But anecdotally, it does feel a little bit like we're taking a leaf out of the Americans' book when it comes to saying, well, there is money that could be given, so here's a lawsuit to try and wrestle it from you.
It was described by someone I know who is an American as America's stupidest export, which I think is an interesting point, because I was going to try and think of something else that was stupider then. It would be a TV show. The Real Housewives of something or other would probably be America's stupidest export. This probably second. Yes, I mean, I can see that there is some value in this in occasions where consumers are generally hard done by. And, you know, actually, there's merit in this. I don't think I'd be affected, because I think in the period of time, I would only have had SIM-only contracts, because I note that the 2007 date is when we started at CNET, and I would have probably, the last phone I think I paid for would have been the Nokia N95. I want to say, so, and that probably was on a contract, so maybe I'd qualify, because that would have been around 2007, wouldn't it? Because we were both at CNET.
We were at CNET in 2007. Yeah, I had an N95 as well at that point.
Yes, we were both N95 fans, weren't we?
We've been SIM only for as long as I can. Because it's better to buy the phone outright,
yes,
and then get a SIM only deal than it is to buy the phone, but it's not always.
I genuinely can't remember what I did back then. I really can't. It was so long ago. And yes, you're right, it was. And back then, phones, well, I mean, what was it, like 200 quid or something? I mean, phones just weren't as expensive.
No, depends on the phone. I mean, when the iPhone came out, what was it, 399?
Yeah.
I think
it was like
the cost
of the bargain in modern terms, doesn't it?
I mean, you could literally buy three iPhones and with money, and that's how much a phone costs now.
Yes, it's ridiculous. Basically. And of course, it's not just Apple, but I mean, they are certainly leading the charge with hefty pricing.
They're as bad as each other. Now, I was looking around for some intelligent comment on this, and I looked around a few websites, and I found very few people in any of the comment sections on financial, sort of personal finance websites who seemed to think that they would ever get a penny of any of this. Or it was people who said, I'll believe it when I see it. Or it's people who compared it to PPI type stories or somebody else saying that it's people who are too stupid to know that they should not necessarily keep on paying, which I don't believe.
Sort of what I said, but I mean, I don't mean it like that because I feel like there is an element of personal responsibility, but I also think that that's what the government should be doing. That's what regulators are charged with. It's making sure that people get a fair deal, and ultimately these, you know, end of contract either staying the same or going up. You know, it doesn't feel very consumer friendly to me. It feels like a cash grab.
Can I run an idea past you that is entirely unthought out? And yeah. let's see how it develops as it comes out of my mouth, because this is real-time thinking. You're experiencing something cutting edge here. How about this? If you, when you sign up for a contract, you opt in to allow that company's rivals to contact you when your contract is up.
Mm.
And when the company's contract is up, they are therefore incentivized to keep you and offer you a good deal, knowing, but not necessarily knowing, that their rivals could be poaching you. Now, they wouldn't have any data, they wouldn't necessarily have anything about you, but if you opted in, what if, would that work? Because I feel like as long as they don't know how much you are paying or who you are or any personally identifiable information other than you are opting out of a contract that maybe fit into a certain band. I don't know. Let's say you were in there's like a 10, 0, 1 to 10 pounds, 10 to 20, 20 to 30 or something. Like it, so they can gauge whether you are someone who might want a 50 pound contract versus a 10 pound contract. But that can be sorted out. But something that at least allows competitors to approach you with a one-off deal. Maybe it's done through like a kind of U-switch type system where it's a third party.
When you started talking, that's exactly what I thought. Was like, why not do it like those, you know, because you have these like, I think you can do it with cars and stuff like that. Or, you know, basically it's a bid. So you tell people what you want and they bid for your custom. So yeah, so tap in your phone number and the date that your contract expires. And then on that day, or a week before that day or a month before or whatever, you get a text message from each of them. One text message saying, right, here's the unlimited data deal. Here's the, you know, the more limited one, the better value kind of thing. You know, they give you three offers. And then you go, okay, yes, I'll take that one. And then you're right, because what that would do is it would incentivize any mobile company to fight for your custom. Of course, it wouldn't work for me because I've tried all the mobile phone operators and they're all rubbish. So
well, you're a very difficult man to please.
No, I'm not. I'm not difficult in the slightest. I mean, I'm happy on EE at the moment because although it is the most expensive, it is the only service I've ever used where I can sit on the train and access the internet, which is mainly what I'm paying for because, you know, it's useful for me. At home, I have Wi-Fi. It's not so useful. So, yeah, so EE's won me over in that regard, but it's, you know, 15 quid more than I was paying last year.
Nick in the live chat says that my idea is great. Thank you, Nick. There's probably a business there. Set up a central exchange that people can tell when their contract is up and the phone companies pay to get your info. I think all of these sorts of things have to be worked. The devil's in the detail. It has to be simple. It's got to be something that you opt out of when you sign up. Data should not be shared. It should be very clear in however it's presented at the end of the contract that it's not a scam because people are rightly suspicious about getting offers and things, but I feel like that can all be sorted out with good communication and marketing, and actually that might be a way that benefits people and it benefits the companies. Let's not forget, competition is healthy. So there's that. Before we move on, a note here. Charlotte says, did you see Nokia are trying to make flip phones happen again? Yes, I did. They've been trying that, I feel, for a while. But now I think about it, I don't know if the ones that I remember them trying were flip, because they tried bringing back the 3310 and then they brought back the banana phone. But flip phones, now I think about it, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. people like that form factor. Like, they really like it. You do see people, older people usually, knocking around with flip phones even today.
Or very young people. I think youngsters like a flip phone, don't they?
Well, yeah, that Samsung flip was really nice. I really like that. I thought that was a really smart. And the Motorola that they did. Again,
With the bending screen, the folding screen.
Yeah,
they're expensive. These are cheap.
They are. Yeah, that's true. But it doesn't change the fact that's a nice form factor to use.
Mm. The official, looks like official Nokia website it's Instagram account. Four features of the flip: retro photography. That's just a fancy PR word for the camera's not very good. Digital detox, fair. Being present, fair. Rarely charging your phone. They are good things. The last three, though, are absolutely nothing to do with the phone flipping. In fact, neither is the first one. But we'll include a link to that in the show notes. Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you, Nick, for agreeing that my idea was great. It's certainly better than some of my others, if I say so myself.
And thank you to Charlotte for pointing out that America's worst export might actually be Taco Bell. I can't comment, though, because I've never had a Taco Bell in either this country or the States.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of Pac Bell, which is what used to be a phone network, didn't it?
Yes.
Taco Bell is burgers?
No, it's tacos. What the hell's wrong with you?
I don't think I've ever had a taco.
No, you probably haven't, knowing you.
I did a search for Pac Bell and Packard Bell came up, which, to be fair, is American, but I don't think that's what Pac... Oh, not to be confused with Pacific Bell, which is what became AT&T, I think. Anyway, okay. Any thoughts on contracts or the things we just talked about or Taco Bell or whatever, do let us know at the usual place, which is hello@uktechshow.com.
It's back! It's the porn block again, sort of. Although this story has also come up in another capacity, which I'll come to later. But Ofcom said it's considering using AI face detection to block access to adult content on the internet, as Technica reported a couple of days ago. The only problem noted in the press release from Ofcom, the communications watchdog, was that there was little evidence that this method is reliable, fair, or effective. That's quite a lot of doubt being cast over things proposed only a few paragraphs before. Anyway, the Online Safety Act behind this, as usual. And the goal is to prevent under 18s from accessing things they shouldn't. Although I do want to point out here that, you know, accessing adult material when you're over 18 could be potentially damaging too, but the government doesn't really care about adults. Anyway, this has also come up before, because weirdly, before Nate and I were talking about the running order for this show, I'd come across a YouTube video discussing that the ESRB, which is the Game Rating Board.
Not the bird charity.
No, that's something else. filed for FTC approval to use similar software to allow parents to consent to playing of age-restricted games, but for their kids. It went down similarly badly, but it doesn't scan your child's face. It scans the parent's face to confirm that you're happy for them to play a potentially age-restricted game. This is...
And that was in the US, if it was FTC, right?
Correct, yes. And that was a patent. So, not a patent, but they were seeking approval. Yes, so this has come up again and again, and it's never particularly popular. It's also been mooted for checkouts at supermarkets to scan your face to see if you're old enough to buy alcohol.
And I've done that.
Relatively recently
at the Tesco in Walthamstow, and it worked very well.
Well, I mean, the thing is, in a checkout, at least notionally, the hardware is pretty much all there, because they virtually, a lot of those self-checkouts have a camera now.
Well, the thing is, crucially, I didn't have my trousers down.
Good, excellent, because that would have, would it have helped your case?
I've thrown you there, haven't I?
Yes, you have a little.
I'm saying that I wasn't trying to access adult material.
I see, right, yes. Well, I mean, no, and of course, that would be the worst place to try, but of course, technologically equipped. So, what, I don't know.
What, a Tesco?
Yeah, oh, because it's got a screen and a camera, so and probably access to the internet. So, I mean...
It also has security guards and CCTV and the public, which, yes. Again, it really threw me off. It wasn't easy.
None of this is what really the point of this is, which is, do we care about using facial recognition for age verification? I mean, obviously, this whole thing is stupid. In
of course.
It's just stupid because, I mean, how are they going to be certain that the equipment that you're using at your computer is not going to be fooled? For example, the iPhone, Windows Hello, all these technologies rely on... an infrared or a depth map to your face in order to allow you access, and that is a pretty good way of making sure that you're not holding up a photo of someone older. But if you're just doing this through a webcam or, you know, your phone, and it's not a face ID, because how would they tie that in? I guess they could. You know, it's just not going to be a reliably secure system. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I'd throw that out there.
Well, you can learn the ins and outs of it as long as you prove that you're over 18. That was a sex reference. I'm sorry, people. So listen, when I was young...
Well, within your rights to have sex before 18, so just to point that out.
Thank you. now I will tell you that when I was young and impressionable, and was sneaking around like a midnight creeper as a teenager, there was a very easy way of getting alcohol and, for a very brief ill-advised period, cigarettes when you were underage. And that was by asking an adult to do it for you.
Adult.
And an adult, yes. A grown-up.
No, you said adult, and we're not in America.
Oh, I see what you mean. You were right to correct me again. Thank you. An adult, yes. You would simply ask a grown-up. That's easy, isn't it?
Yes.
A grown-up. To go in and buy it for you. And every now and again, you get a wise grown-up who would say, you're too young, stop being stupid. But of course, you'd do it anyway. And I wonder, would that not just work in this instance? And I think that's kind of your point, in a way. Like, you would go and hold, you know, find a picture of your dad and hold that up, which may spoil the mood somewhat. But... because then presumably you'd immediately set the photograph down and then have a photo of a parent staring at you while you're staring at something else, which is just, again, not, it's just not, don't, just don't do it. But presumably if they're trying to do this through webcams, which is the proposal here, then that's going to be possible.
Everyone's, many of these things that come out of the government when it relates to technology, it doesn't necessarily feel like it's been entirely thought through. It's not just adult content. You know, there's also a whole list of things that they're talking about here for the AI facial recognition could help with. You know, open banking, photo ID matching, credit card checks, digital identity wallets. You know, all of these things more justifiable, but still, people don't love it, do they? I mean, yeah.
Now, there's a quote in the Register story, and we'll include the link to this in the show notes. It says this: in 2022, Daniel Pryor, then head of research at the Adam Smith Institute think tank, warned that any tech-savvy teen would likely be able to circumvent restrictions, while adults entering their details stood every chance of being exposed in the event of a data breach. Couldn't agree more. And I don't think you need to be a tech-savvy teen. And also, aren't all teens tech-savvy?
Reasonably.
In order to hold up a picture of a grown-up or put on a fake beard, as Kate in our live chat says. But it's a fair point. Nick also says, might be questionable for women. This is true. We've been caught out. We're thinking about boys and men watching porn. But as I've seen in surveys, a lot of women watch porn. And putting on a beard might not necessarily help you there. So this affects us all. Not you and me.
It does. But I mean, again, it's... I alluded to it in what I was saying. You know, that there is a serious issue. And porn is part of it. And, you know, it's not just something that affects kids. I understand what they're trying to do with protecting the children. But at the same time, it's like, well, we have to equip our children properly to understand what's out there, what's, you know, what they can see and why it's potentially damaging, in order to send them into their adult years with a better understanding of, you know, each other rather than watching some videos. You know, I don't know. The whole thing the whole thing is awful from start to finish. It's the stupidest bill that we hate, and I can't believe we're talking about it again. But
it's not a bill. That's the thing.
It's an act.
It's law now, but this is, I mean, maybe we should have spelled this out a little bit more clearly at the beginning. This is essentially guidance on how age checks that are part of the law should be performed. And yes, they include things like checking credit cards and photo ID matching and things. But one of the proposals is also facial age estimation using AI. Now, the final suggestions, that is to say, like, the guidance, you know, a white paper or whatever form it'll take. We're not even going to see that until 2025. Yes. It's going to be over a year away. So this is a long time, and a lot can change in that time. But if there's
just
one
in time
thing,
for Grand Theft Auto 6,
which every child will buy because every parent won't care.
Because, well, I will. I won't let my children play that game.
They'll still play it though, mate. I wasn't allowed to play Grand Theft Auto when that came out, but do you know what? There was a demo version of it on the front of PlayStation magazine, and I played that to death.
I bet. And also, I was playing Doom at 13, and I realised that's not the same. And games when we were kids, you know, they weren't as close to photorealism as they are now. You know, you probably weren't going to come to too much harm with the quite cartoony Doom. But even so, that was then rated 18, right, later on.
Yes. And I would say that most of the time, I think my mum was right to stop me doing certain things that she did.
I mean, at least to try, because, sure, like, I completely accept the fact that we don't have control over our children. My parents didn't have control over me. It's just one of those things. And there's so much going on in the minds of teenagers. It's extremely hard to... you know, to do anything to talk them out of things, because they're not being led by reason. They're being led by, you know, learning how the world works. But even so, we have to make an effort to try. I think that all of this effort should be going into better funding for schools. It's the only answer, really. You know, tell the kids what they're going to find. I mean, they do this, but perhaps they could do more of it, or, you know, the whole thing could be better.
Rich and Russ in our live chat says, I had my nan buy me Duke Nukem 3D. I remember getting my gran to buy me a copy of The Exorcist on DVD. It was the third DVD I ever owned. And I was under 18 at the time, but I think it was okay.
I mean, we all thought, I mean, kids are notorious for thinking they're, or wanting to be older than they are. And then you get to our age, or my age particularly, and you're like, oh, would be nice to be 10 years younger. Not 21. No one wants to be 21 again. That was not great, but, you know.
No. As a slight side note, the other thing I once got my gran to pay for me was a premium membership to the website hotornot.com. Do you remember that?
What a waste of money.
Not at all. I met a girlfriend through it.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
I'd like to thank our patrons for supporting us. I'd like to thank our...
Thanks, guys.
I'd like to thank our free listeners also for leaving us reviews and telling friends and family and colleagues about the show, because that really helps. We say it, we joke around a lot, but we do mean it. We're very grateful for people who support us with money, particularly at the moment. Times are hard for a lot of people. Thank you. And if you're leaving us reviews, if you're telling people about the show and how they can listen, helping them find it if they're not pod savvy, then it really, really helps us. So thank you for that. We've got some great live listeners now, and we are going to move into our third discussion topic for those listeners and for all of our patrons who get the full ad-free version. And we're going to be talking about laptops. Well, that's going to do it for this week. We've had a very interesting chat just now about the wonderful world of desktops and laptops and switching from one to the other and the pros and cons. Patrons enjoyed that. You can become one. You know the score. We've just told you all about that. Ian, I hope you have a wonderful weekend and week
ahead.
Thanks
very much.
We're moving. Well, we are in the December month now. A great month, full of cheer, not just because of the Christmas, but also because it's my birthday in a week.
It is. It is, isn't it?
Kate is taking me to see Decapitated live.
Oh, wonderful. Because I can't imagine Decapitated would be Kate's first choice of
I don't think they would be her first choice, but she's seen quite a lot of obnoxious metal bands with me over the last 10 years. But that's what I'll be doing. Kate says she's going in order to buy a T-shirt. Fair enough. I hope you all have a great week as well. If you're going to see Decapitated in London on the 14th of December, by all means, let me know and we'll meet up and talk about how great Polish metalers are. Until then, toodle pip.
Au revoir.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.